WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many of us have carefully studied Liv Ullmann's face as framed in close-ups by director Ingmar Bergman. Her face expressed the subtleties of depression, despair, and confusion, the emotions that dominated the movies that Ullmann and Bergman worked on together, like Persona, Shame, Face to Face, and Cries and Whispers. Since 1980, Liv Ullmann has devoted less time to acting and more time to humanitarian work in her roles as Goodwill Ambassador for UNICEF and Vice President of the International Rescue Committee. She has a new movie, but she doesn't act in it. It's her debut directing a feature film. She also co-wrote the screenplay. The film is called Sophie, and it's adapted from a 1932 Danish novel set at the turn of the century. I asked Liv Ullmann what it was like to direct and be the boss on the movie set.
In pre-production with the actors, with the set designer, costume, makeup, and so I had no problem because we were kind of talking the same language, the same emotional language. But the first day on the set, the first day of shooting, it was hard because then I met a crew, I met people who deal with the technical aspects of a film, and they like to use their language, and their language wasn't always my language. And also, obviously, being a woman, as you may know too, from a working place, you have to prove yourself in a way that men don't often have to do. And so we had a week where, you know, there was this silent power struggle, and I won. But I had decided I don't want to win because I'm crying or because I'm emotional or, you know, having temper tantrums. I want to win by them respecting that I've done my homework, and since it's my script and my vision, they will finally understand that I know what I'm talking about. And they saw the rushes, and they saw how good the actors were, and without words, we put down the so-called little war and had a wonderful piece of 3 months where we danced together to my drum.
What was the power struggle about, and what did you do to win?
It's the usual power struggle, you know, that it's not easy for all men, nor for many women, to take directions from a woman. I also wanted on the set that there would be a kind of language, the way we talked to each other, on that it would be gentle and full of respect. And mainly I wanted the actors, you know, to be treated really warmly and nicely, so they would feel very safe, very trusted, so they could create, because I find that actors are creative. These were very established, wonderful theater actors of Denmark, and I wanted them to bloom. And to bloom, they cannot, you know, be told, well, hurry up, hit that mark, do this and that. And so there were some, you know, disagreements there, because sometimes they were talked to that way, and I had to make sure that that wouldn't happen again. And also there were a lot of technical, what do you say, words I didn't know. You know, to me, a camera can fly. To me, a camera can dance, and it can slowly come into a face and, you know, caress a body. And obviously, that's not the dictionary used when you set up a scene, but that's how I spoke. And in the end, they had to understand.
Did they laugh at you at first when you used this poetic language instead of more technical terms?
Sure, they laughed. And they would then use technical language far more than they needed to make sure I didn't understand them. And, you know, if you don't understand something, you don't even know you're supposed to make a decision. And that's how, not only in films, but in all fields of life, that sometimes women become strangers to what is going on, because they do not really understand what the question is, nor that there is a question. because it's only when we, you know, talk the same language that we can share the responsibility of an answer. So they would make me sometimes invisible, and that's when I didn't cry, and that's when I didn't storm out of the studio. That's when I stood there being invisible, saying, hello, I'm here, and, you know, whatever you think, we're going to do the shot my way.
Did you have to work to not cry, or was that just not the instinct in the first place? You know, well, sometimes when you say to yourself, I'm not going to cry, that's when you really weep.
I know. Well, yeah, I had to, because it would have been so easy to say, okay, take the responsibility now, you guys, for all this. I know you're so much better. And because it's in my nature to say also a little, I'm sorry, can I go and get you coffee while you do the important stuff here? But I knew I'll lose if I do it. And I had worked so hard on the preparation. I knew my stuff so well, and I had the hole in my head, not the hole as a hole in the earth, but
the whole thing
in my head. So I knew nobody else had that, because I'd been with this script for so long. So I had to remind myself, don't cry, Liv, it's going to be fine. And it was fine.
Now, you've been directed by one of the most emotionally intense directors, Ingmar Bergman. Was there anything you tried to borrow or tried to consciously avoid based on your experiences as an actress being directed by him?
Well, you know, I think as in most professions in life, you learn more by those who do it bad than almost by those who do it well, because you learn by the bad ones what not to do, what makes you nervous, what makes you insecure. You know, that's not how I should deal with people. From the best ones, you don't really think, I have to remember this, I have to remember this. And although I made 11, I think, wonderful pictures with Ingmar Bergman, I've made so many more pictures with so many other directors and theater and writing, and I've been up and going for so many years. So as hard as it may seem for people to believe, I don't wake up and go to bed thinking, what would Ingmar Bergman have done and thought now?
What's the story of how you made your first film, Persona, with Ingmar Bergman, who directed it, and B.B. Anderson, who co-starred with you?
Well, I'd been an actress for many, many years, actually. Then in Norway, 8 years, and I was a leading actress in the National Theatre of Oslo. I'd done many Norwegian and Swedish films at that time, and I met Bibi Andersson on a Swedish film and went to visit her in Stockholm. And on the street we were walking and we met Ingmar Bergman, and like in the books, although it wasn't Lana Turner, I was Ingmar Bergman looked at me and said, would you like to do a film with me? And I thought that was a glib thing to say, and so I just blushed and said yes. And but the film then that he had in mind, where I had a small part, that never happened, because he became ill. But while in the hospital, he had kept this image of Bibi and me on the street, and he had seen a photograph of us and struck by our likeness. He was in the hospital and he wrote in a week a film, Persona, based on the likeness between two women, and that was Persona. And you know, it was all came together, pre-production and everything, within 14 days, 3 weeks. Bibi and I was vacationing in Czechoslovakia when we got a fax to the embassy of Sweden, come back, Bergman is out of the hospital and eager to do a film with you. And we went back and thought we were doing this little film on an island in Sweden, and it turned out to be, you know, a really very special film in film history. Today, many have made films like that, but at that time, it was a first, and it's a classic film.
In Persona, you play an actress who is very depressed, going through like an existential crisis, and you've given up speaking. And Bibi Andersson plays your nurse. There are many scenes in which you're staring into the camera or staring just off into space, and there's just incredible intensity on your face, registering this absence, you know, this feeling of kind of groping for meaning. What were you thinking about during those long scenes in which the camera is just observing your naked face?
Well, I don't really know. You know, I've seen the pictures since then, and I was so young, actually, when I did it. I was 27, and the one thing I did understand was that I was doing Ingmar Bergman, and that's what I continued to do in a lot of the films. And just because he wanted to work with me, he made the role into a woman's role instead of a man's role. I was too young, really, to understand what an existential crisis was. And I was kind of a happy person, and it hadn't occurred to me that one has such crises. And today I understand much more. But I think my luck was that I somehow recognized Bergman and saw it's him I'm portraying. So I watched him, and I did him on camera.
What did you find in his face or in his body that you borrowed for that role?
Oh, this young boy. I saw a picture of him as a schoolboy when he was 11, and you can just see this boy doesn't have many friends, and he has all these pimples, and it's just somebody wanting to come out and say, "Hi, here I am, please see me." And that's what I saw in this grown man who was, you know, 21 years older than me. And I borrowed that. So if you say I'm looking intently into space and all that in persona, I think I was trying to show this person, you know, wanting to communicate, wanting to be part of the world, but not knowing how to, and then deciding, I'm not going to speak, I'm just going to go into myself and hide from people. I can understand more of that today, not that I want to go inside and hide, but I can see how some people find it so difficult to live and to connect with others that they find it easier to just shut the door. It's sad, but I can see why some would make that choice.
It sounds like you understood shyness better than you did the existential crisis.
Probably. But I think shyness is at the bottom of much existential crisis. Shyness in a deeper meaning, shyness where you feel so much on the outside, you feel everybody else have got it together, and you are the forever outsider.
My guest is actress and now director Liv Ullmann. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Liv Ullmann is my guest. She's directed the new movie, Sophie. Now, you and Ingmar Bergman became lovers. Was it ever a strain having a lover who was older and was also the boss, the director? I mean, you had, it's sometimes an awkward position to be in, to have the person who you're most intimate with also be the person who's giving you directions.
Well, I tell you, it wasn't like living with Bob Hope. And, you know, when we met for breakfast, tell me about his nightmares, I knew I was going to star in them in his next film. But and actually, we did Persona, and then I only did two films for him while we lived together. The bulk of the work we had done together was after our personal relationship was all over. But those two films, oh, that was no fun, you know. The others, when the day was over, they could go and have fun and be together and so, but I had to go home with the boss, and this was really a boss, you know, in existential crisis. And yeah, that was kind of tough. And we lived on this island, and he built a house there where we had made Persona, and he built a wall around the house, and nobody would look in, but nobody could look out either. So it was some strange years there.
Was there ever literally a breakfast in which he told you about a nightmare and you did play that scene in a movie afterwards?
Yeah, actually it was. But many years after, actually the picture you mentioned earlier, Face to Face, where he told me, yeah, and an exact scene like a nightmare he had had at that time was in this film.
What was the scene? What was the nightmare?
Where the woman, which I played in Face to Face, who tries to commit suicide, she wakes up in her childhood bed. She's visiting her, I don't know who she was, must have been her mother. And she wakes up and on the bed is sitting this strange woman with a glass eye, a black glass eye, just staring at her and then reaching out and trying to embrace her. And she screams. And she wakes up. And that was his nightmare. And, yeah, that's what I got to do.
So was it more relaxing to act after your relationship with him that ended?
Yeah, well, I tell you, you know, he is not as dark as his films seem to say, nor, you know, while we're doing the films, even the dark ones. There is so much laughter and fun working with Ingmar Bergman. His films, except for Fanny and Alexander, which is the last one he did, are not showing so much of that really playful young boy that he has. But during filming, we had so much fun. Alan Josephson, who is also in Sophia, he's, you know, my best playmate. I can't tell you how during all these years we have been doing all these violent scenes, and then in between we are lying in a bed there on the set, you know, because it's always a bed because we're always married. And we just laugh away and tell jokes and secrets and badmouth the director and so. And that's why it was fun doing, or strange actually, doing Sophia, because here is Erland Josephson married to somebody else, Gita Nørby, the Danish actress he's married to in the film. And there they were, you know, lying in bed and laughing and going on. And I knew they were bad-mouthing me, I'm sure. And I couldn't be part of it. I had to kind of set up new shots and be on the other side of the camera. And it was very strange suddenly to see my playmate, you know, in his old role. And I suddenly had this new role of a director.
In 1980, when you started doing a lot of work for UNICEF, had acting started to lose its magic for you?
Maybe somewhat, at least some people that I was meeting during acting, you know, because you don't get to work only with wonderful directors like Bergman. You get to work with some bad ones too. And the older you get, the more impatient you are with listening to people doing bad homework. So, yes, I felt that for somebody who always said, I want to really live life and be real in life, I was spending most of my time in film studios and on the stage and with makeup and so. And I was really, apart from being with my child and so, having very little time to do a life outside of the profession.
You wrote in one of your books, in describing yourself as an actress, you said, I see myself as a sieve. Everyone's feeling flows through me, but I'm never able to retain them. In the evening, I'm put aside empty, only to be inundated the next day with new emotions. Can you compare that experience, that sieve-like experience of acting, with the experience of going around the world watching other people suffering?
Well, you're not a sieve there, and I must have been really affected by these Bergman films when I wrote that. That sounds, when you go around the world and you meet these strong, wonderful women who do so much for their community, who have so little and no reason to trust life, and in spite of that, trying to overcome. No, you're not a sieve. You just want to tell their story. You want to make their life better. You want to return to the riches of your own world and see how can we share this a little better. And when you see the suffering, you know, you cannot come home and say, oh, I suffer so much, I cannot sleep. They suffer, and your opportunity is to come home and and do something about it. None of us can change the world, but all of us can, you know, make a ripple, a positive ripple, as opposed to all the negative ripples that we see around us. But no, you are no longer a sieve, and I think that's what is good. You retain.
You must really be struck by the contrast between movie values, especially Hollywood values in America, and the humanitarian work that you do. You travel around the world trying to help people who are starving or deprived in some way. And in Hollywood, I mean, actresses, once they get into the 40s, I have to start thinking, well, should I go for that plastic surgery or not? You know, and it's two such completely different sets of values and of seeing the world.
I know. And so I was probably very lucky that, you know, Hollywood didn't have a great love affair with me, because that never became my choice. I've always lived closer to reality than I would have maybe if I'd become an enormous big Hollywood star. And I think it's sad that especially we women who have fought so much, you know, to be respected for who we are, that we do feel we have to invade this temple or whatever we are and change the surface just to please the surroundings, that we, you know, that we don't encourage ourselves and others to take pride in who we are, who we grow into, you know, pleasure in a face that has been invaded by our tears and our laughter. And, you know, so we are not as young looking as we were, but we have a lot of stuff inside that, you know, if we leave our face alone, it's going to come out and it's going to look okay. You know, it's not shameful to do facelifts, but it's sad that we feel we have to do it. And especially, as I said, we women who fought so hard and still are fighting to be recognized for who we are, you know, not what we look like.
Liv Ullmann, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Liv Ullmann directed the new film Sophie. It opens in New York May 21st. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.